Chapter 3. General Ivan Fyodorovich Epanchin stood in the middle of the room and looked with extreme curiosity at the young man as he entered. He even took two steps towards him. Mushkin went up to him and introduced himself.
"Quite so," said the general. "What can I do for you?"
"I have no urgent business. My object is simply to make your acquaintance. I shall be sorry to disturb you, as I don't know your arrangements or when you see visitors. But I've only just come from the station. I've come from Switzerland."
The general was on the point of smiling, but on second thoughts he checked himself. Then he thought again, screwed up his eyes, scrutinized his visitor again from head to foot, then rapidly motioned him to a chair, sat down himself a little on one side of him, and turned to him in impatient expectation. Ganya was standing in the corner at the bureau, sorting papers.
"I have little time for making acquaintances, as a rule," observed the general. "But as you have no doubt some object—"
"That's just what I expected," Mushkin interrupted, "that you would look for some special object in my visit. But I assure you I have no personal object, except the pleasure of making your acquaintance."
"It is, of course, a great pleasure to me, too. But life is not all play, you know. One has work, sometimes, as well. Moreover, so far I haven't been able to discover anything in common between us. Any reason, so to speak—"
"There certainly is no reason, and very little in common, of course. For my being Prince Mushkin, and Madame Epanchin's being of the same family, is no reason, to be sure. I quite understand that. And yet it's only that that has brought me. It's more than 4 years since I was in Russia, and I left in such a state, almost out of my mind. I knew nothing then, and less than ever now. I need to know good people. There is also a matter of business I must attend to, and I don't know to whom to apply. The thought struck me at Berlin that you were almost relations, and so I would begin with you. We might perhaps be of use to one another, you to me and I to you, if you were good people. And I'd heard that you were good people."
"I am very much obliged to you," said the general, surprised. "Allow me to inquire, where are you staying?"
"I'm not staying anywhere as yet."
"So you've come straight from the train to me? And with luggage?"
"All the luggage I have is a little bundle of my linen. I've nothing else. I generally carry it in my hand. I shall have time to take a room this evening."
"So you still intend to take a room at an hotel?"
"Oh, yes, of course."
"From your words, I was led to suppose that you had come to stay here."
"That may be, but only on your invitation. I confess, though, I wouldn't stay, even on your invitation. Not for any reason, but simply because I'm like that."
"Well, then it's quite as well that I haven't invited you, and am not going to invite you. Allow me, Prince, so as to make things clear once for all. Since we have agreed already that there can be no talk of relationship between us, though it would, of course, be very flattering for me, there's nothing but—"
"Nothing but to get up and go."
Mishkin got up, laughing with positive mirthfulness, in spite of all the apparent difficulty of his position.
"And would you believe it, General? Although I know nothing of practical life, nor of the customs here, yet I felt sure that this was how it was bound to be. Perhaps it is better so. And you didn't answer my letter then. Well, goodbye, and forgive me for troubling you."
Mushkin's face was so cordial at that moment, and his smile so free from the slightest shade of anything like concealed ill will, that the general was suddenly arrested, and seemed suddenly to look at his visitor from a different point of view. The change of attitude took place all in a minute.
"But do you know, Prince," he said in a quite different voice, "I don't know you, after all, and Lizaveta Prokofievna will perhaps like to have a look at one who bears her name. Stay a little, if you will, and if you have time."
"Oh, I've plenty of time. My time is entirely my own."
And Mushkin at once laid his soft round hat on the table.
"I confess I was expecting that Lizaveta Prokofievna might remember that I had written to her. Your servant, while I was waiting just now, suspected I'd come to beg for assistance. I noticed that, and no doubt you've given strict orders on the subject. But I've really not come for that. I've really only come to get to know people. But I'm only afraid I'm in your way, and that worries me."
"Well, Prince," said the general with a good-humoured smile, If you really are the sort of person you seem to be, it will be pleasant to make your acquaintance. Only I am a busy man, you see, and I'll sit down again directly to look through and sign some things, and then I'm going to His Grace's, and then to the office. So, though I am glad to see people, nice ones, that is, but I'm so sure, however, that you are a man of very good breeding, that... And how old are you, Prince?
26.
Oh, I supposed you were much younger.
Yes, I am told I look younger than my age. I shall soon learn not to be in your way, for I very much dislike being in the way. And I fancy, besides, that we seem such different people, through various circumstances, that we cannot perhaps have many points in common. But yet I don't believe in that last idea myself, for it often only seems that there are no points in common, when there really are some. It's just laziness that makes people classify themselves according to appearances and fail to find anything in common. But perhaps I'm boring you. You seem...
Two words. Have you any means at all? Or do you intend to take up some kind of work? Excuse my asking.
Certainly. I quite appreciate and understand your question. I have for the moment no means and no occupation either. But I must have... The money I have had was not my own. It was given me for the journey by Schneider, the professor who has been treating me and teaching me in Switzerland. He gave me just enough for the journey, so that now I have only a few farthings left. There is one thing, though, and I need advice about it. But
tell me, how do you intend to live meanwhile? And what are your plans? Interrupted the general.
I wanted to get work of some sort.
Oh, so you are a philosopher. But are you aware of any talents, of any ability whatever in yourself, of any sort by which you can earn your living? Excuse me again.
Oh, please don't apologize. No, I fancy I've no talents or special abilities. Quite the contrary, in fact, for I am an invalid and have not had a systematic education. As to my living, I fancy...
Again the general interrupted and began questioning him again. The prince told him all that has been told already. It appeared that the general had heard of his deceased benefactor, Pavlishchov, and had even known him personally. Why Pavlishchov had interested himself in his education the prince could not explain. Possibly it was simply from a friendship of long standing with his father. Mushkin lost his parents when he was a small child. He had grown up and spent all his life in the country, as his health made country air essential. Pavlishchov had put him in charge of some old ladies, relations of his, and engaged for him first a governess and then a tutor. Mushkin said that, although he remembered everything, there was much in his past life he could not explain, because he had never fully understood it. Frequent attacks of his illness had made him almost an idiot. Mushkin used that word, idiot. He said that Pavlishchov had met in Berlin Professor Schneider, a Swiss, who was a specialist in such diseases, and had an institution in Switzerland, in the canton of Valais, where he had patients suffering even from idiocy and insanity, and treated them on his own method with cold water and gymnastics, training them also, and superintending their mental development generally. Pavlishchov had sent him to Switzerland to this doctor nearly 5 years ago, and had died suddenly 2 years ago, making no provision for him. Schneider had kept him and continued his treatment for those 2 years, and although he had not completely cured him, he had greatly improved his condition. Finally, at his own wish, and in consequence of something that had happened, he had sent him now to Russia. The general was very much surprised.
"And you have no one in Russia? Absolutely no one?" he asked.
"At the moment, no one. But I hope..." "I have received a letter."
"Have you, anyway..."
the general broke in, not hearing the last phrase.
"Have you at least been trained for something? And would your affliction not prevent your taking, for instance, some easy post?"
"Oh, it would certainly not prevent me, and I should be very glad of a post, for I want to see what I am fit for. I've been studying for the last 4 years without a break, though on his special system, not quite on the regular plan, and I managed to read a great deal of Russian, too."
"Russian? Then you know the Russian grammar and can write without mistakes?"
"Oh, yes, perfectly."
"That's good. And your handwriting?"
"My writing is excellent. Perhaps I may call that a talent. I'm quite a calligraphist. Let me write you something as a specimen," said Mushkin warmly.
"By all means. It's quite essential, in fact. And I like your readiness, Prince. You are very nice, I must say.
You've got such splendid writing materials. And what numbers of pens and pencils. And what splendid thick paper. And what a jolly study. I know that landscape. It's a view in Switzerland. I am sure the artist painted it from nature, and I am certain I've seen the place. It's in the canton of Uri.
Very probably, though it was bought here. Ganya, give the prince some paper. There are pens and paper, right at that little table. What's that? Asked the general, turning to Ganya, who had meanwhile taken from his portfolio and handed him a large photograph. Ah, Nastasia Philipovna. Did she send it to you? She herself? He asked Ganya eagerly and with great curiosity.
She gave it me just now, when I went with my congratulations. I've been begging her for it a long time. I don't know whether it wasn't a hint on her part at my coming empty-handed on such a day, added Ganya with an unpleasant smile.
Oh, no, said the general with conviction. What a way of looking at things you have. She'd not be lucky to hint. Then she is not mercenary either. Besides, what sort of present could you make her? That's a matter of thousands. You might give her your portrait, perhaps. And by the way, hasn't she asked for your portrait yet?
No, she hasn't, and perhaps she never will. You remember the party this evening, Ivan Fyodorovich, of course. You are one of those particularly invited.
Oh, I remember, to be sure I remember, and I am coming. I should think so. It's her 25th birthday. Do you know, Ganya, I don't mind telling you a secret. Prepare yourself. She promised Afanasy Ivanovich and me that at the party this evening she would say the final word, to be or not to be. So mind you are prepared.
Ganya was suddenly so taken aback that he turned a little pale.
Did she say that positively? He asked, and there was a quaver in his voice.
She gave us her promise the day before yesterday. We both pressed her till she gave way, but she asked me not to tell you beforehand.
The general looked steadily at Ganya. He was evidently not pleased at his discomfiture.
Remember, Ivan Fyodorovich, Ganya said, hesitating and uneasy, that she has left me quite at liberty till she makes up her mind, and that even then the decision rests with me.
Do you mean to say you... Do you mean to say...
The general was suddenly alarmed.
I mean nothing.
Good heavens. What sort of position will you put us in?
I haven't refused, you know. I know I have expressed myself badly.
The idea of your refusing,
said the general with vexation, which he did not even care to conceal.
It's not a question of your not refusing, my boy, but of your readiness, of the pleasure and the gladness with which you will receive her promise. How are things going at home?
What does that matter? I decide everything at home. Only father is playing the fool as usual, but you know what a perfect disgrace he has become. I never speak to him, but I do keep him in check, and if it were not for my mother, I would turn him out of the house. Mother does nothing but cry, of course. My sister is angry, but I told them straight out at last that I can do what I like with myself, and that I wish to be master in the house. I put it all very clearly to my sister while my mother was there.
I still fail to understand it, my boy, observed the general meditatively, with a slight motion of his hands and shrug of his shoulders. Nina Alexandrovna kept sighing and moaning when she came the other day, you remember? What's the matter, I asked. It appeared that it would mean dishonour to them. Where does the dishonour come in, allow me to ask? What can anyone reproach Nastasia Philipovna with? What can anyone bring up against her? Not that she has been living with Totski, surely. That's such nonsense, under the circumstances especially. You wouldn't let her be introduced to your daughters, she says. Well, what next? She is a person. How can she fail to see? How can she fail to understand
her own position? Ganya prompted the embarrassed general. She does understand it. Don't be angry with her. But I did give her a good lesson not to meddle in other people's affairs. Yet the only thing that keeps them quiet at home is that the final word has not yet been said. But there's a storm brewing. If it's finally settled today, it will be sure to break out.
Mishkin heard all this conversation sitting in the corner, writing his specimen copy. He finished, went to the table and presented his page.
"So that's Nastasia Philipovna,"
he observed, looking attentively and curiously at the photograph.
"Wonderfully beautiful,"
he added warmly at once. The portrait was indeed that of a wonderfully beautiful woman. She had been photographed in a black silk dress of an extremely simple and elegant cut. Her hair, which looked as though it were dark brown, was arranged in a simple, homely style. Her eyes were dark and deep, her brow was pensive, her expression was passionate, and, as it were, disdainful. She was rather thin in the face, and perhaps pale. Ganya and the general stared at Mishkin in surprise.
"Nastasia Philipovna? Surely you don't know Nastasia Philipovna already?"
queried the general.
"Yes, I've only been 24 hours in Russia, and already I know a beauty like that,"
answered Mishkin. And then he described his meeting with Rogoshin. He repeated the story he had told him.
"Here's something new," said the general, uneasy again.
He had listened to the story with the greatest attention, and looked searchingly at Ganya.
"Most likely nothing but vulgar fooling,"
muttered Ganya, who was also somewhat disconcerted.
"A young merchant spree. I've heard something about him before."
"And so have I, my boy,"
put in the general.
"Nastasia Philipovna told the whole story of the earrings at the time. But now it's a different matter. It may really mean millions, and a passion. A low passion, perhaps, but still there's the note of passion about it. And we know what these gentlemen are capable of when they are infatuated. I only hope nothing sensational will come of it," the general concluded thoughtfully.
"You are afraid of his millions?"
asked Ganya with a smirk.
"And you are not, of course."
"How did he strike you, Prince?"
asked Ganya, turning suddenly to him.
"Is he a serious person, or simply a silly fool? What is your opinion?"
There was something peculiar taking place in Ganya as he was asking his question. It was as though a new and peculiar idea was kindled in his brain and flashed impatiently in his eyes. The general, who was simply and genuinely uneasy, also looked askance at the prince, but did not seem to expect much from his answers.
"I don't know what to tell you," answered Mishkin. "Only I fancied that there was a great deal of passion in him, and even a sort of morbid passion. And he seems still quite ill, too. It's quite possible that he'll be laid up in a day or two again, especially if he begins carousing."
"What? You fancied that?"
The general caught at this idea.
"Yes. Yet something sensational may well happen. Not in a day or two, but before tonight. Something may turn up, perhaps today,"
said Ganya to the general with a grin.
"Of course. Very likely. And then it will all depend on how it strikes her,"
said the general.
"And you know what she is like sometimes."
"Like what do you mean?"
The general pounced at him, roused to extreme perturbation.
"Listen, Ganya, please don't contradict her much today, and try to be, you know, in fact, to please her." "Why are you grinning like that?" "Listen, Gavril Ardalionovitch, it won't be out of place, not at all so, to ask now, what are we working for? But understand that as regards any personal advantage to me in the matter, I'm quite at rest. In one way or another, I shall settle it. Totski has made up his mind once for all, so I am perfectly secure, and therefore all I desire now is simply your advantage. But you can see that for yourself. Can you mistrust me? Besides, you are a man of sense, and I was relying upon you. Since in the present case,
And that's the chief thing,"
put in Ganya again, coming to the assistance of the hesitating general, and twisting his lips into a malignant smile, which he did not even try to conceal. He looked the general straight in the face with his feverish eyes, as though he wanted him to read in his eyes all that was in his mind. The general crimsoned and was angry.
"Quite so. Sense is the chief thing," he assented, looking sharply at Ganya. "You are a funny person, Gavril Ardalionovitch. You seem pleased about this young merchant, I observe, as though he might be a way out of it for you. But in this affair, it's just by your sense you ought to have been guided from the first. In this affair, you ought to understand and to act honestly and straightforwardly with both sides, or else to have given warning beforehand to avoid compromising others. especially as you've had plenty of time to do so, and there's still time. Indeed, now...
The General raised his eyebrows significantly.
Although there are only a few hours left. Do you understand? Do you understand? Will you or won't you? If you won't, say so. And please yourself. Nobody is coercing you, Gavriil Ardalionovitch. Nobody is dragging you into a trap. That is, if you look on it as a trap.
I will, said Ganya in a low voice but firmly. He dropped his eyes and sank into gloomy silence. The General was satisfied. He had been carried away by anger, but he evidently regretted that he had gone so far. He turned suddenly to Myshkin, and his face seemed to betray an uneasy consciousness that the prince had been there and had at least heard what was said. But he was instantly reassured. A glance at Myshkin was enough to reassure anyone.
"Ho, ho!"
cried the General, looking at the specimen of the handwriting presented him by Myshkin.
"That's a prize coffee, and a splendid one! Look, Ganya, what skill!"
On the thick sheet of vellum, the prince had written in medieval Russian characters the sentence, "The humble abbot Paphnuti has put his hand thereto."
"That," Myshkin explained with extraordinary pleasure and eagerness, "that's the precise signature of the abbot Paphnuti, copied from a 14th-century manuscript. Our old abbots and bishops used to sign their names beautifully, and sometimes with what taste, with what exactitude. Haven't you Pogodin's collection, General? And here I've written in another style. This is the large round French writing of last century. Some letters were quite different. It was the writing of the marketplace, the writing of professional scribes imitated from their samples. I had one. You'll admit that it has points. Look at those round O's and A's. I've adapted the French writing to the Russian alphabet, which was very difficult, but the result is successful. There's another splendid and original writing. See the phrase, 'Perseverance overcomes all obstacles'? That's Russian handwriting, a professional, or perhaps military scribes. That's how government instructions to an important person are written. That's a round handwriting, too, a splendid black writing, written thick but with remarkable taste. A specialist in penmanship would disapprove of those flourishes, or rather those attempts at flourishes, those unfinished tales, you see them? But yet you know they give it a character, and you really see the very soul of the military scribe peeping out in them, and longing to break out in some way and to find expression for his talent. And the military collar, tight round his neck, and discipline, too, is in the handwriting. It's lovely." "I was so struck with a specimen of it lately. I came on it by chance. And fancy where? In Switzerland. Now, this is a simple, ordinary English handwriting. Art can go no further. It's all exquisite. Tiny beads, pearls. It's all finished. But here is a variation, and again a French one. I got it from a French commercial traveller. It's the same style as the English, but the black strokes are a trifle blacker and thicker than in the English, and you see the proportion is spoiled? Notice, too, the oval is a trifle rounder, and the flourish is admitted, too, and a flourish is a most perilous thing. A flourish requires extraordinary taste, but if only it's successful, if symmetry is attained, the writing is so incomparable that one may simply fall in love with it."
"But you go into such niceties," laughed the General. "You are not simply a good penman, my dear fellow. You are an artist, eh, Ganya?"
"Marvellous," said Ganya. "And he recognises his vocation, too," he added, with a sarcastic laugh.
"Well, you may laugh, but there's a career in it," said the General. "Do you know, Prince, to what personage we'll get you to write now? Why, you can count on 35 roubles a month from the start. But it's 12:30, he added, glancing at the clock. "To business, Prince, for I must make haste, and perhaps I may not see you again today. Sit down for a minute. I've explained already that I cannot see you very often, but I am sincerely anxious to help you a little. A little, of course, that is, in what's essential. And then for the rest, you must do as you please. I'll find you a job in the office. Not a difficult one, but needing accuracy. Now, for the next thing. In the home, that is, the family of Gavriil Ardalionovitch Ivolgin, this young friend of mine with whom I beg you to become acquainted, His mother and sister have set apart 2 or 3 furnished rooms and let them, with board and attendance, to specially recommended lodgers. I am sure Nina Alexandrovna will accept my recommendation. For you it will be a godsend, Prince, for you will not be alone, but, so to speak, in the bosom of a family, and to my thinking you ought not to be alone at first in such a town as Petersburg. Nina Alexandrovna and Varvara Ardalionovna, her daughter, are ladies for whom I have the greatest respect. Nina Alexandrovna is the wife of a retired general who was a comrade of mine when I was first in the service, though, owing to circumstances, I've broken off all relations with him. That doesn't prevent me, however, from respecting him in a certain sense. I tell you all this, Prince, that you may understand that I recommend you personally, and so I make myself, in a sense, responsible for you. The terms are extremely moderate, and I hope that your salary will soon be quite sufficient to meet them. Of course a man wants pocket money, too, if only a little. But you won't be angry with me, Prince, if I tell you that you'd be better off without pocket money, and indeed without any money in your pocket. I speak from the impression I have of you. But as your purse is quite empty now, allow me to lend you 25 rubles for your immediate expenses. You can repay me afterwards, of course, and if you are as sincere and genuine a person as you appear to be, no misunderstandings can arise between us. I have a motive for interesting myself in your welfare. You will know of it later. You see, I am perfectly straightforward with you. I hope, Ganya, you've nothing against the prince's being installed in your house. Oh, quite the contrary. My mother will be delighted, Ganya assented politely and obligingly. You've only one room let, I think. That, what's his name? Ferdyshenko. Oh, yes, I don't like your Ferdyshenko. He's a dirty clown, and I can't understand why Nastasia Philipovna encourages him so. Is he really a relation of hers? Oh, no, that's only a joke. There's not a trace of relationship. Well, hang him. Well, Prince, are you satisfied?
Thank you, General. You have been very kind to me, especially as I haven't even asked for help. I don't say that from pride. I really didn't know where to lay my head. It's true, Rogozhin invited me just now.
Rogozhin? Oh, no. I would advise you as a father, or if you prefer, as a friend, to forget Mr. Rogozhin. And altogether, I would advise you to stick to the family which you are entering.
Since you are so kind, began the prince, I have one piece of business. I have received the news...
Excuse me, broke in the general. I haven't a minute more now. I'll go and tell Lizaveta Prokofievna about you. If she wishes to see you at once, I will try to give her a good impression of you, I advise you to make use of the opportunity and gain her good graces. For Lizaveta Prokofievna can be of great use to you. You bear her name. If she doesn't wish to, there's nothing for it. Some other time, perhaps. And you, Ganya, look through these accounts meantime. Fedosiev and I have been struggling with them. You mustn't forget to include them.
The general went out, and so Mushkin did not succeed in telling him about the business which he had 4 times essayed to speak of in vain. Ganya lighted a cigarette and offered one to Mushkin. The latter accepted it, but refrained from conversation for fear of interrupting him. He began looking about the study, but Ganya scarcely glanced at the sheet covered with figures which the general had indicated to him. He was preoccupied. His smile, his expression, his thoughtfulness weighed on Mushkin even more when they were left alone. All at once Ganya approached Mushkin, who was at that moment standing before the portrait of Nastasia Philipovna, gazing at it. "So you admire a woman like that, Prince?" he asked him suddenly, looking searchingly at him and as though with some peculiar intention.
"It's a wonderful face," he answered, "and I feel sure her story is not an ordinary one. The face is cheerful, but she has passed through terrible suffering, hasn't she? Her eyes tell one that. The cheekbones, those points under her eyes. It's a proud face, awfully proud. But I don't know whether she is kind-hearted." Ah, if she were, that would redeem it all.
Then would you marry such a woman? Ganya went on, his feverish eyes fixed upon him.
I can't marry anyone. I'm an invalid, said Mushkin.
And would Rogozhin marry her?
What do you think?
Marry her? He might tomorrow. I dare say he'd marry her, and in a week perhaps murder her.
He had no sooner uttered this than Ganya shuddered so violently that Mushkin almost cried out.
"What's the matter?" he asked, seizing his hand.
"Your Excellency! His Excellency begs you to come to her Excellency," the footman announced, appearing at the door.
Mushkin followed the footman.